to the Buckmaster Show. It's Friday, January 20th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster. Thanks for choosing our program. We are live here Monday through Friday at noon on The Voice, KBOI, AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our Voice Network partners in Douglas, Cochise County residents listening to us on 930 AM KAPR, and in Gila County and Globe, Eastern Arizonans tune in to The Buckmaster Show on AM 1240 KJAA, and we stream the show live at my website, buckmastershow.com, and the station's website, kvoi.com. And if you miss a particular show, we have 24/7, anytime, anywhere listening on three venues, buckmastershow.com, tucsonsentinel.com, and tucsoncitizen.com. Fridays, we get things going with our Friday Focus interview. Today, we welcome Dr. Mark Stegeman, president of the Tucson Unified District Governing Board. Joining me to question Dr. Stegeman, Mark Evans, the administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. And we welcome you to join in the conversation at any time. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Stegeman, call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Dr. Stegeman, good to see you. Thanks for being with us. Mark, nice seeing you.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, by now everyone knows that you and three of your colleagues turned thumbs down on the Ethnic Studies program at TUSD. Simply put, Was it an economic decision not to appeal this, or was there a combination of factors?
I think the economic threat posed by the possible funding cutoff was the biggest factor, but I don't think it was the only factor. I think the fact that we could not really win in the end, that even if we prevailed legally against this law, the legislature could pass another law, and by the Constitution of the State of Arizona, the Superintendent of Public Instruction does regulate curriculum. So in the end, we're not going to win that battle, and why prolong the agony?
Were you surprised that at Miguel Cuevas' vote, most people were assuming it was a 2-2 split on the board, that it was going to be you and Mike Hicks, and then you had Adelita Grijalva and Miguel Cuevas seen on one side, and then that the tiebreaker was going to be the new board member in Sugiyama. But then Miguel voted against it as well. Were you surprised by that at all?
I wasn't sure. I guess in the end I wasn't surprised. I thought that he would have voted for the compromise, what I viewed as a compromise proposal back in March. I thought I had his vote for that. Then he shifted his position a little bit, and it looked like he might vote to appeal. But then in the end he shifted back. So you should ask him the reasons for that. But in the end, I wasn't too surprised, because I think my judgment is his sincere feeling was that we needed to make some change here, that this wasn't productive for the district. But that's a question for him.
790-2040. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Stegeman, give us a call right now. Some of the books that have been used in that program, I think there's at least seven that have been put into storage. Why into storage and not why into the library for other students to use, Dr. Stegeman?
I think in the end that is where some of those might go. We're looking into which one of those are already in the libraries, but after we look at that and after we look at the books, I think that might be what happens.
I want to read you a quote that you posted on Facebook about books. The quote is, "I suspect that TUSD is using many books which were never legally approved in many different courses, and we have to track down and either remove them or to go through proper curriculum approvals. Staff has already begun the process." Are we talking about looking like to ban books at TUSD? Is this kind of a witch hunt?
No. I think it's just the fact that the district has not been doing things according to correct processes, either according to statute or according to our own policy. And that leaves us vulnerable when people come after us and they can say this hasn't been properly approved, as Huppenthal said, for our program. So I view it more as just cleaning up what we're doing. I suspect the vast majority of what we're using is fine and it gets approved, but we need to go through some sort of process and do it the way we're supposed to to do it.
So books are not being banned right now?
No. I don't know of any other books that we're looking at banning. But the problem is central administration just doesn't even know. We haven't really done correct process, and we have to go back and clean everything up. But in the end, I assume the vast majority of it is fine.
So those former MAS teachers who are now teaching other classes that aren't called Mexican-American Studies, can they, if they choose, use these books in their instruction, the seven books that were named in Cole's ruling?
I think that that is the million-dollar question, and there's a gray area in defining curriculum concerning, and this is just in general, beyond MAS, concerning how much latitude teachers have to bring in material outside of the district and state-specified curriculum, and that is a gray area. I think our guidance from council in this particular issue is that for now they shouldn't use those books at all. Now, that may not be the case forever, but I think an issue for us here is that we want to convince the Department of Education we're in compliance with the law, and I think our council is recommending that to make that case, and based on our discussions with them, that we shouldn't, for the time being, use those books at all.
And we being not just the former MAS teachers, but any teacher within TUSD?
Right. None of those books ever had any approval for any course. That's what staff has found out. And so right now I would say that those books should not be used. Books that are outside the specified curriculum usually shouldn't be used. We do specify curriculum for a reason, and teachers should stick to that. But as I say, there is some gray area. In general, in this case, I think for now the gray area is gone.
But in terms of the district spinning this, is that it's not a ban; it's an unapproved curriculum, and therefore we can't use those books in unapproved curriculum. This has been going on for 2 years, and the district has known about these books for a long time, and it has had multiple opportunities to say, "Well, wait a minute, this isn't an approved curriculum; these aren't approved books." And have pulled them long ago. So by not doing it, isn't that had been tacit approval all along? And really what's happening is this is simply a reaction to MAS, the MAS ruling, and those books are being boxed up to keep you guys from getting in trouble with Huppenthal.
I think if you go back to a few years ago, I think tacit approval is a good description of what was going on, and not just with these books, but with different curricula in the district that weren't approved. I think over the past year and a half, it was less tacit approval and more a strategy of not taking action until we really had the administrative law judge decision and Huppenthal's final ruling, and then we would act all at once instead of in bits and pieces. I didn't totally agree with that strategy necessarily. Other board members felt differently, but I can understand it, that once it became a big controversy, we were just going to sit tight and then wait till everything came in and then make a decision.
Is this issue, as far as you're concerned, now over?
Oh, boy, I'd like it to be over. But I don't think that what I like is going to be what happens. I think the critical thing for the district, and this was in the resolution that we passed last week, and I've been saying this for a long time, is to move on to recreating a curriculum that does much more than the standard curriculum to incorporate Mexican-American culture and history into what every student sees, because everyone really needs to see this stuff, and includes controversial viewpoints in a balanced way, and makes a serious effort to improve Latino student achievement. And I think the sooner we can get past this and get onto that positive conversation and develop things that address those original goals in a way that a very broad part of the community can support, the better off we are. I think that those positive steps are in the end going to be the only thing that gets us off the current destructive conversation.
Hindsight is 20/20, but if you had to look back over the last couple of years, starting with the controversy that erupted with Dolores Huerta's comments at assembly at Tucson High School, how would you rate how the district has handled this and decisions that it's made along the process? And if you could go back and make changes, where do you think those would be?
Oh, well, the first thing that comes to mind is things I would have done differently. And I would have done two things differently. I brought that proposal last spring because I thought it would pass. I thought I had 3 votes to pass that. In the end, we pulled that because staff thought it was too hot, and I don't disagree with that. I think that was a reasonable assessment, and I relented and we pulled it back. And that, I still say that might have been the right thing. But if I, to do, but if I had known in advance we were going to pull it back, I wouldn't have put it forward. I mean, there's no point to putting forward something that just created controversy and didn't pass. So in retrospect, I wouldn't have brought that forward if I knew we weren't going to do it. And the second thing is, as I've said before, the meeting on May 3rd where we had the huge police presence and the arrests, we should have handled that differently. So those are the two personal things. But the district as a whole, I think, has been in denial that this was a serious issue. And going back a couple of years, I've been trying. First, I said we should have an external review before the law came into effect to identify problem areas, and the district wasn't interested in that. And I proposed several things along the way to try to move us off of the position of completely defending the status quo. And I think it was the district's error to simply refuse to consider anything else until it was too late.
And part of that was also to follow the due process that was laid out in the law, which seemed to be a kind of a circular logic in due process, because it always came back to the superintendent of public instruction's decision, no matter what the administrative law judge said. In an interview more than a year ago, after John Pettacone became superintendent, I asked him what the district's policy was going to be, and they wanted to follow their legal advice, he said at the time, was to follow the due process set out in the law rather than join in the lawsuit that had been filed by the teachers. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think the district should have a year ago said this law is unconstitutional and we're going to defend the district and sue the state rather than go through this whole process?
No, because I think that is a battle that we're going to lose in the end. The law was a bad law in different ways, in my opinion. I always opposed it, but it is the law, and it's also true that more broadly, the state has considerable control over curriculum, quite aside from this law. And so that wasn't a fight we were going to win, and I don't see the point to fighting a fight you're not going to win. So no, I don't think we should have done that, and I don't think we should have joined the teachers' lawsuit because I think we were uncomfortable with their lead counsel apart from anything else. So I don't regret that that part.
Coming up now on 12:17 on the Buckmaster Show, and quickly before we take the break, before we were talking about books and possible banning books, Shakespeare's The Tempest was not one of the books.
No, that was never one of the books that was banned. According to staff, and I have no reason to doubt them, all that happened was that the teachers were given guidance that all the books you've been using in your courses you have to use in a way that's consistent with our standard curriculum guidelines. Okay. But The Tempest was never removed.
But that's not what Curtis Acosta said.
Well, I don't want to get into a debate with any particular person, but staff has said unequivocally that there is no ban on The Tempest and that every student, any teacher can use The Tempest.
All right, we're going to take a break right here with Dr. Mark Stegeman. If you'd like to join in on the questioning or comment, 790-2040. We will be right back.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded in 1930 by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn still sets the standard for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. The Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. The Arizona Inn has again been named one of the best 500 hotels on earth by Travel and Leisure magazine, the only hotel in Tucson to receive this top honor. And the Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson at 2200 East Elm and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Piero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Piero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Piero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at pieroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Well, 22 on the Friday Focus. Dr. Mark Stegeman is with me. He's the president of the TUSD Governing Board. Also with me in studio, Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. Dr. Stegeman, I want you to react to this recent Facebook posting by Jeff Rogers, who heads up the local Democratic Party. He stated the four board members, you and three others, who had voted to close the program, the MAS program, should be removed from office, then stepped over the rail. That's what Sarah Garrett Gasson wrote in her editorial today, that in the Star, that Mr. Rogers stepped over the rail with this quote: after their defeat, they need to be tarred, feathered, and rode out of town on a rail. Frankly, they are just unfit to live in a multicultural community like Tucson. Sorry to be so direct, but you just can't pussyfoot around with such evil, unquote, from Jeff Rogers. Your reaction?
Well, my first reaction is that he's addressing this to a white guy, a Hispanic guy, and a Japanese-Brazilian guy, and to say that we can't live in a multicultural community is a little strange. But my bigger comment is that this is really the language of the lynch mob, and I'm sure he doesn't intend to promote violence, but it is a language with violence in it, and I don't think it's responsible for a party leader to speak that way. I think that if the Republican leader in Pima County spoke that way, this town would be all over him.
Let's quickly go now to the Buckmaster Show. Live line, David is with us. Go ahead, David. You're with Dr. Stegeman.
I'm looking at a document right here. It's a TUSD book approval form for June 12th, 2007, and it'll be up online shortly at thethreesonorans.com. It has approved curriculum books, Critical Race Theory, Occupied America, and Pedagogy of the Oppressed, 3 of the 7 books, which you say are not approved by the TUSD board. What do you think of if you see these documents, and they have been approved by the TUSD board, will you then let them be back in the classroom?
Oh, I have seen those documents. The problem is that there are statutory and policy requirements for how books get approved, and there's a review process, and these books were approved just as lines on a long list of books without that process. So, yes, they were approved by vote of the board, but it wasn't done correctly.
To get back to the comment by Jeff Rogers, the politics of this issue, it's often couched in terms of race, and that this vote is white Republicans, the Empire Strikes Back, getting back at the district and at this program for the comments that Dolores Huerta had said several years ago. But there's another side of this. There's also the view from Democrats, and Democrats, I think, have been often more silent about this as it's progressed. But you've been in the classrooms. You've done a little bit more than most in the district have to get to the bottom of what's going on in those classrooms. And is it really just about what students are being taught about Mexican-American history in the United States and how they've been treated by the dominant white population? Or was there a political tinge, do you think, about this that is really what was behind Cowell's ruling?
Well, one thing I've learned over the last year, and my viewpoint has shifted, is that there was a very strong political agenda in the curriculum. I think you can see this in the thousands of pages of evidence that were produced for the hearing. And I saw it myself in a couple of classroom visits, one visit in particular. And I want to read, this will take half a minute here, but I think it's worth getting into the record. This is a writing prompt that was made during the class that I saw. Quote, "The audience encounters Mexicano and Chicano individuals that exploit or abuse people of their own cultural and ethnic heritage. Simultaneously, the immigration laws of this country, which are largely crafted by middle-aged European-American men, serve as a framework which creates this environment for exploitation and abuse. In a well-considered essay, compare the ethical issues along ethnic lines." And I think that's an ethnically charged assignment, and it is much weaker than a lot of the stuff which the state produces evidence.
Let's go now to the Buckmaster Show live line. We have Lori ready with she has a comment about the Jeff Rogers Facebook posting. Go ahead, Lori.
Yes. Hi, Bill. Hi, Ms. Dr. Stegeman. Well, we go back to January 8th and the call for stability. And I think this, especially coming from a leader of a political party, completely flies in the face of the call for stability and a kinder and gentler approach. And I'm appalled that we have a leader of a political party that's come out and called for this type of, quote-unquote, appeared violence toward a man who was Dr. Stegeman and the rest of the board, who was only trying to make this fair. We talk about fair. Make it an elective and be done with it and educate our children.
And Lori, for the record, you're from the Republican Party, right?
I am, absolutely. But, you know, it was directed at us during the January 8th that we were not civil enough. And I'm appalled that we have a leader of a political party, being Jeff Rogers, who's come out and stated and made this allegation and basically inciting someone to do something. And I think it's really wrong.
Thank you, Lori. Go ahead, Dr. Stegeman, your remark.
Well, I think the district has been subject to a lot of pressure from the legislature, which is bad. It is a kind of intimidation, but I think we've been subject to intimidating language from the local Democratic Party, and that's bad too. I think everybody needs to tone it down.
So this is an election year. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot toning down. This is going to be an issue. You know, we'd like to see the district move on beyond this. I've editorialized that, you know, the district needs to get beyond this because there's other more serious problems within the district that need to be addressed. But it's not going to go away because we're in an election year. But considering that you're a Democrat and that Jeff Rogers of the Democratic Party has made these comments, you know, how do you foresee the coming election cycle and the tone of that debate that's going to come out in the next several weeks?
I'm afraid that the signals are that it's going to be pretty nasty.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say. I have a consistent policy of trying not to, of not criticizing board members, not criticizing staff, really trying not to be negative about anyone, and I'll try to stick with that.
Do you think he can get reelected?
Quickly.
Possibly, yes.
Gotta go.
I don't know.
And you are running for reelection.
Well, I've said I'll decide this month. It's likely. I think
Gotta go.
Gotta go.
Dr. Mark Stegeman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
And Mark Evans will be with us. Stick around. Sarah Garrett Gasson coming up from the Star on the Reporters Roundtable on this, the Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Rick Santorum says he's still in the race. Ron Paul says it's a primary that could propel his campaign forward. But Senator Jim DeMint says tomorrow's GOP presidential primary in South Carolina is really a two-man race now between Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich. The search for the 21 people missing since that cruise ship ran aground off the Italian coast has resumed. There had been worries that the ship was slipping off the reef on which it came to rest, but officials say its position has now stabilized. A fast-moving snowstorm has been whipping through the Chicago area, forcing airlines to cancel more than 370 flights at the city's two major airports. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 55 points, the Nasdaq trading 8 points in the red. More details at srnnews.com.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain and Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, the 20th of January. It's KVOI AM 1030 and the Voice Network over Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station for the Buckmaster Show. And each Friday afternoon at this time, we present the Friday Reporters Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Reporters Roundtable, Mark Evans. He is the administrator for TucsonCitizen.com, and Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer for the Arizona Daily Star, joins us now, and we welcome you you, as always, to join us anytime on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. If there's something that you would like to comment on, we'd love to hear from you. 790-2040. The Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by our friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more. Check out their website, SplendidoTucson.com. Sarah, good to see you. We've already welcomed Mark Evans, and hope you're having a good week.
I am. Thanks for having me.
Good. Want to talk about, I mentioned you, as you know, in the first half hour in the editorial that you wrote that is in today's Arizona Daily Star, Students Forgotten in TUSD Fiasco. Our view, what really matters is what's best for every pupil in the district.
It's absolutely true. When you hear about everything that's going on with the Mexican-American studies situation in the Tucson Unified School District, everyone says it's for the children. Everyone says they're doing it so the Latino kids in the district can have the best education possible. But when you drill down into it, it's a bunch of adults yelling at each other. And it's a bunch of adults who may, in their heart of hearts, think they are acting in the right way, but they also don't have, they've seemed to have lost the perspective of stepping back and saying what we are doing, right or wrong, is an example to kids, and that the students, the ones who we're supposed to be caring about, there's 32,000 kids who are Latino in TUSD, and all of this energy and focus is about one program, and it's coming at the expense of the attention that's needed for the education of every child in TUSD.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Sarah. I was glad to see that what she'd written today. I had written in the past that, you know, TUSD needs to get past this because there's a lot more important things the district needs to be doing. But then, you know, I don't offer up any of my own ideas of how to get past it because I don't know how they get past it, because the both sides of this issue are so deeply entrenched, and they've made this into such a huge controversy that has become a zero-sum game. There is no compromise here. It's you know, Republicans and Democrats in the Congress almost. But I came in here today with some questions I was going to ask Dr. Stegman, and, you know, of course, you get going and then you move on to other topics, and I didn't get a chance to ask him that. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is, since he's the president of the board, what's his plan for moving on? I mean, how do they get past this? And in order to get past it, I think they need to find some way to get everybody back on the bus, if you will, to come to some sort of agreement, some sort of accommodation, so that they can form some coalitions to solve this problem, but then also solve the others that the district
that's
faces.
That's going to be so hard because it's so polarized right now.
It is, and it goes, I think I've written this in a previous editorial this week. We need to understand that this is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening as the result of decades of work by leaders in this community who have fought and been passionate advocates of education for children. So this is something that means much more than it might appear to mean from the outside. The flip side of that is that it means a lot more than it might appear to mean to the people who are trying to fight it, too, who are trying to shut down and have been successful in shutting down the program. So what is striking is that when you have all these entrenched roots and crossed interests and webs that go into every corner of our community, it's really hard to extract all of that history and move forward in a way where people will say, okay, we can come together. I can listen to you. I will trust that you will listen to me and actually work together.
Yeah, I think it's going to take someone from outside the district, someone with a measure of gravitas who is both respected by the Latino community, including the politically active Latino community, who's really driving the opposition to this action, as well as state Republicans, where you can reach some sort of compromise within the district and move beyond this, so that these students who have been left in the lurch here can feel like, you know, they are their concerns and their interest in what they want to be taught is being taken into consideration, but that the other concerns about the nature and the tone of this program is also dealt with in a reasonable way. And I don't know who that person is. I don't even know if they exist, but that's the only way I see we getting beyond this as someone from outside the district.
And the election that will be coming up for the TUSD governing board members will probably be draw a line in the sand. Those, are you for MAS, Mexican American Studies, or are you against it?
Right. And that is such a short-sighted litmus test, in my view, because it's about one issue. It's not about the education of 52,000 or so kids, who each one of those kids deserves a high-quality education, not just a group of kids who sign up to take a particular class. The other ironic thing is that the community and the sense of bondedness that these teachers, who are, you know, are tremendous teachers, have created in their students, that's the kind of teaching, that quality of education is what every child needs in every school. And so that, I think, we have examples of what is the best part of education and what needs to be replicated. And all of that is getting lost in the whole tornado of hyperbole, as I said in today's editorial, that's surrounding this issue.
Yeah, the problem that existed in the district in 1999 when they had a blue ribbon panel that said, okay, how are we going to handle these issues of the Latino dropout rate? And other issues in dealing with the desegregation order. That's the other thing that's not really getting talked about here, is the implications for the desegregation order that has come back to life because of the Ninth Circuit. Those problems still persist. And then when this program was created, it was a single class, and it was more or less ignored by the district, and it was allowed to grow and expand and totally unsupervised until it became controversial, as sparked by the comments and the stuff that went on in 2008, I think.
It's been a while.
With Dolores Huerta. That brought the attention on it, brought the attention of state legislators and Tom Horn on the district. But the problem that it was supposed to solve is still there. And so the district still has to deal with it, and they have to deal with it in an effective way. And if they can't do it through this MAS program because of the state law, they're going to have to find another way to do it. And that needs to be a topic of the election coming up. The candidates are going to have to be able to address that issue, not just I was for the ruling or against the ruling. That doesn't move us, that doesn't get us anywhere. It needs to be, how are we going to solve these problems within the district?
And it's the another thing that I'd like to point out is that the only people that all of this disorganization and dissension benefits, the only strategy and priority that this helps are the Republican lawmakers who are trying to kill this thing anyway, because they've managed to not only force the district to kill the program, but they've also created and splintered the people who support it, because there are a lot of people who support the Mexican American Studies idea and the program, but don't want to get anywhere near the vitriol and the just hyperbole and just the negative energy that has been the main vocal public push to keep it.
And it was 2007. Thank you to our producer, Rosemary Brandt, for giving us a quick check on that. It was 2007 that all of this began. A big story on the front page of the Star, and I think it's a very important story. I think that was Sarah, I think that was, I'm not your editor, but I think that was that was the right placement, because I think it's potentially a big deal. The EPA says it's not ready to recommend approval of a federal permit for the Rosemont mine under the Clean Water Act, and that it has major concerns that could further delay the project. Dan Scheer, who is a regular with us on our Friday Reporters Roundtable, from Sierra Vista, the Sierra Vista News, and Saharita Sun, I asked Dan what he thought of it, and he said the letter is significant, but it's not necessarily the death knell that Rosemont opponents think it could be. The letter simply says that the EPA has deep concerns on a handful of issues, including how several endangered species are affected and water quality. It's asking for a review by the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers. At the very least, Dan writes, this will likely slow down the process for Rosemont for several months. He says, though, I still believe the strategy of Rosemont opponents is to prolong the permit process in hopes that investors will move on to other projects. But ultimately, Dan thinks that this will not stand in the way of the mine being approved. Your comments. Begin with Sarah.
Well, I think it's important that the EPA has recognized that there are real serious concerns about the water issue. And as someone who lives down in that area, it affects, you know, thousands and thousands of people. The broader point is that I think it's encouraging, and I should say that the Star editorial department board has not come out for or against the mine. We're still in the study phase. But just from my own monitoring of it, that I think that anything that can extend the period that where people are looking at issues, considering facts, going back and forth, I think that is beneficial, even if in the end they end up approving the mine.
But as much light as shined on this is
yeah,
good.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, people say jobs are temporary, they may be long-lasting, but you don't want to mess with the water table. You just don't, because once it's gone, it's gone.
In terms of running out the clock, I don't think that's going to be effective because of the price of copper. It's the price of copper that made this mine attractive, and the price of copper, I think, is going to remain high, absent some discovery, some massive ore body somewhere, because of the technological revolution that's taking place in former third world countries such as China and the Southeast Asia and India, and the demand for copper is going to remain quite high. So I don't think this is going to go away. I don't think you're going to be able to run them out. In terms of whether this EPA ruling is a nail in the coffin, this is through the process, the 404 permitting process through the Army Corps of Engineers, and it was submitted as one of several thousand comments through that process. That said, the EPA retained some veto rights over that 404 permitting process.
Which they have used 13 times, according to Tony Davis' story in the Star, 13 times in the last, say, 40 years or so.
So the paucity of that use would lead me to think that it would have to be some sort of egregious environmental problem that would cause them to overrule the Corps of Engineers. And I don't necessarily think that these two small creeks that we're talking about here that are dry 99% of the time of the year is really going to be that quite an egregious violation of the environment. So I still think the mine's going to get built. But.
Okay, we are still, 2 weeks into this legislative session,
yes.
Sarah Garrett-Guest, and one of the things that the governor put as kind of the one of her marquee issues in her state of the state was her plan. She wanted to do this by statehood day, the centennial day, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Governor wants to buy back the Capitol. And I don't – did you write the editorial this week?
I did not, actually.
Okay.
We talked
Jane
about
C.
it.
Jane C. White wrote
no,
it.
No, actually.
Someone else.
I don't remember who wrote it, but it wasn't
me. But anyway,
me.
It says governor's plan and the Star to buy back Capitol makes little sense.
Yes. And that pretty much sums it up. It's one of these things that sounds great when you say it in a speech, rally point, yay, yay, yay.
But, applause point, right?
Right. But the fact is that because of the way the deal is structured, it's not going to cost us any less to pay for it 10 years down the line than it is right now.
By paying now, though, there's a huge front load.
Right. And there are so many other priorities that the state is facing. It just does not make sense to me. I mean, I'm not someone who wants a lot of debt in government, but it just doesn't make financial sense to me in terms of running the state and keeping kids educated and people, driving on safe streets. It's not a priority.
It makes even – the only thing that makes less sense was the mortgage those buildings in the first place. And the only reason they did it is because they couldn't come up with the hard choices necessary to either raise the revenues necessary to balance the books last year or to completely gut healthcare, not just reduce some of its funding, not just make a few cuts into it, but actually gut the thing, or to gut public schools. Those were their only other real choices because those are the two biggest consumers of the state budget. So instead, they mortgaged the buildings, and then the only way people were going to loan them money is if they get money back. They want an interest rate, and they weren't going to get to do it if they were going to make, 3% for 1 year. They wanted a 10-year guarantee, and that's what they got. So, if we're going to pay it anyway, let's not use this money now. Let's hold on to it because we still have that fiscal cliff coming next year when the half-cent sales tax expires. They're absolutely right. It makes no sense.
Connie and Shaba staying together, moving to the San Diego Zoo. Couldn't this have been taken care of long ago? A solution.
I would imagine so, but I'm not an elephant expert. Yeah. But I am glad that they are going together. We still need to know the backstory of how all of that happened, because the fact that the San Diego Zoo has a mixed herd with African elephants and Asian elephants that's been known for a while. So the public pressure on don't separate Connie and Shaba apparently worked, and they will be going to San Diego and will be the envy of many a Tucsonan come summer.
You don't want me to comment on this. I'll lose you listeners. This issue is so stupid, and there's so much more that we need to be dealing with in Tucson than the fate of these elephants.
Okay. 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. Mark Evans, Sarah Garrett Gasson, thank you both very much. We'll see you both at the zoo, I guess.
Right.
It's all happening at the zoo.
Yeah, right, it is. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. We've got Weekend Watch with the culinary cruiser, Matt Russell. He's got a full lineup of things to do this weekend. We'll hear his three picks right after this.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit pyramidfcu.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Hi, Meg. I see you're cleaning out the garage.
Not exactly. I'm trying to find Grandma Lynn's clock, for what it's worth.
For what?
What's it worth with a Z? It's an antiques appraisal fundraising event on February 12th at the Doubletree Hotel. You can bring in two items, have them appraised by those famous appraisers, you know, you see on TV.
Famous appraisers?
Yeah, you know, Colleen Fesco, Michael Flanagan.
How much does it cost, and what can I have appraised?
A $60 ticket, woman, admits two people, and you can bring up to two items. You can bring furniture, jewelry, china, rugs, paintings, whatever. The proceeds go to help children in need in Tucson.
Where can I buy tickets?
You can buy your tickets online at whatsitworth.org. That's what's it with a Z. Wait, where are you going?
I'm going to find my two items for What's It Worth. I love Michael Flanagan, and it's for a good cause. See you there.
Proceeds benefit Assistance League of Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencium and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Oh, it's that time of the week, the time we love. When we hear that music, we know the weekend is here, and the man that presents Weekend Watch is the famous Matt Russell, known as the Culinary Cruiser, award-winning publicist here in town, Russell Public Communication. And speaking of Russell Public Communication, usually, Matt, around, say about 9:30 in the morning after you drift into the office on Friday and you assemble the troops, what do we got going? Oh, yeah. You start looking at your watch. And looking at the watch, and is it time? I'm going to have to run to a luncheon appointment. Then, of course, I have the Buckmaster Show. And before you know it, you're usually out the door by about 10:15.
Well, you know, I couldn't have said it any better. But we do regular time checks about every 10 minutes on Friday, starting, as you said, at about 9:30. Now that it is, in effect, it's lunchtime, our weekends are just about to commence. We're very excited here at Russell Public.
And, of course, you set the tone by your attire, and today you did break out the old, well, it's not probably the old one, it's the new one that you picked up over in Maui, the Hawaiian shirt.
Exactly. It's back into active duty. It's back into the rotation. And with the glorious weekend that we have in front of us, with the weather being the way it is, I think I might even dip my toes in the pool when I get home.
There you go. Anything going on at Guinea's French Cafe this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give a shout-out to Chef Guinea over there. Guinea's French Cafe on the north corner of Prince and Campbell is going to be having her famous fabulous Friday event today. It's going to start here in just a couple of hours, Bill. From 3 to 6 p.m., she's going to be featuring $3 house-made cocktails, $1 off every glass of wine, $3 beers, and she'll have a special happy hour menu featuring all of your favorite French classics like Patisson and Escargot and Moules Marinière. How am I doing with my French, Bill?
Oh, you're doing real well, and something tells me you'll be in line at 2:55 this afternoon.
You know me all too well. Every time we walk into Guinea's, it's like transporting yourself to a French cafe in the countryside. It's just a wonderful place to go.
You know, Matt, we haven't had time to really get to Dillinger Days at the Hotel Congress on the Buckmaster Show, so you will have to do the honors right now.
It's an honor to do it, Bill. One of my favorite events of the year, of commemorating the capture of one of America's most wanted fugitives, John Dillinger. Starting this weekend, we're going to be setting the clock back to 1934. Starting at 10 o'clock, Hotel Congress downtown is going to be transformed into an old speakeasy, and they're going to featuring a premium whiskey tasting. They're going to be having live big band music, host of 1930s memorabilia. That's going to be going on tonight. And then on Saturday, what a great opportunity to come back down to Hotel Congress, bring the kids. There's this great reenactment of the John Dillinger capture. I've taken my kids down there year in and year out, and they just do it first class down there at the Hotel Congress.
And they're going to be restoring an old fire engine, too, as part of this.
Yeah, they are indeed. I mean, the Fire Foundation really is showcased in wonderful ways down there. They are showing the documentary of the old movie Hot Pion, which was talked about the fire at the old Hotel Pioneer downtown. They're going to be raising money for the Fire Foundation by raffling tickets for a brand-new Nissan Leaf, the all-electric Nissan Leaf car. Lots going on at Dillinger Days. I'm looking forward to it.
A lot of good red meat at Sullivan's Steakhouse.
Yeah, indeed. On the Buckmaster Show, we're always looking out for the great steaks. There's so many of them, but my pick for this weekend is Primetime Sunday at Sullivan's, of course, and Campbell. And for only $32, per person bill starting Sunday at 5 o'clock. A three-course meal, including the centerpiece prime rib cut, a group to enjoy live music, a wonderful dinner, and in fact, perhaps a nice cigar out on the patio when we're done.
There you go, Matt Russell. Have a great weekend. Good eating to you, Matt.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. The Buckmaster Show, presented in part by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. There's more to find out about at SplendidoTucson.com. And the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants. It's tax season. Give Michael C. Flowers a call. Stop by 2919 East Broadway. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, you know what I say, it only takes two to form a team. Our producer, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. We will be back with you Monday live, noon to 1, right here on the home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Have a great weekend.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR, Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.